investor really believing that it's not just price, that there's some shared connection, shared view.
Specifically down the services route, what was it that drove you down, you know, that particular niche as a sector?
It's definitely not a one-size-fits-all approach. There's a range of engagement that we will have with a portfolio company.
Welcome back to the Raw Selection Private Equity Podcast. Joining us today is Josh Koplowicz, Managing Partner at Thayer Street Partners, a US private equity firm investing in the services sector. Let's dive in. Josh, if you could give us a 60 to 90 second breakdown of you, please.
Sure. My name is Josh Koplowicz. I'm the Managing Partner of Thayer Street Partners. We're a New York-based private equity fund focused on flexible style of investing in growth stage businesses, particularly in financial services, business services, and real estate services. We've been at it for about a decade. Prior to that, I started my career at Goldman Sachs, working on an on-balance sheet investing platform. Born and raised in New York City and still live here today.
Excellent. Thank you very much. What one mistake do you see private equity firms or portfolio companies making, and what action would you suggest to correct them?
So I think in this environment, there are two items that jump out at me. So one is on the underwriting side and one is on the deal dynamic side. And so on the underwriting side, particularly in the last several years, you've seen PE firms underwrite levered returns that assume very cheap debt, and multiple expansion, and they look phenomenal. But when you peel back the onion, if you don't have those two factors on your side, returns may not be there, and the risk is much higher than initially meets the eye. And so as a first cut in underwriting, what we're doing and other firms do is really look at the underlying asset or company you're buying on an unlevered basis. Is it attractive to own without debt, without multiple expansion, simply because there's an opportunity and a meaningful one for the cash flow of that business to grow materially over your expected hold period? It could happen organically because of some macro trend or regulatory change. It could be because you're gonna get in there and optimize efficiencies and expenses and increase the cash flow. But having high conviction that you can make acceptable and hopefully attractive returns before the advent of cheap debt and expanded multiples really has to be your first screen. And we're seeing other firms getting in trouble now because they hadn't done that. The second is deal dynamic. And I think, you know, everyone in private equity is guilty of chasing a company and winning an investment simply because you're the highest bidder. And that's not necessarily going to be the formula for success. So we're focused predominantly in the lower mid market and working with companies that are growing pretty quickly. And during that journey, it's not always smooth sailing. There's bumps in the road, there's rockiness, there may be personnel issue, small business execution issue, cultural changes as the business scales from 20 executives to 100. And our view is we really need to enter a business where we think there's a good reason for us to be partners with an existing portfolio company or asset, and they feel the same way. And it's got to be more than just us paying a competitive price. And so if that exists, because we have complementary skill sets or shared view on the sector, or some other symbiotic connection, that's going to substantially increase our likelihood of success and ability to work through those challenging times. If we were just, you know, the guy that paid 5% more than the next firm, that may not be sufficient for us to be great partners necessarily.
Makes sense. It's focusing on the next exit rather than the current one, and basically a message to portfolio companies or potential firms to choose their partner wisely with who they're going to go to bed with for the next, you know, 3 to 7 years.
Yeah, and also, you know, frankly, I know of sponsors, and it's happened to us where because both sides knew there was a preferred partner. That preferred partner got to enter that portfolio company at a cheaper price than where other people were willing to pay. And it worked out for everyone because they helped the company grow more.
Sorry to interrupt. Just a quick mention of our longstanding partnership with Grata. As you will probably know, the private equity scene is constantly evolving. And deal flow is moving now to proprietary and data-driven processes. Grata provides you with the data and information of over 7 million private companies. So if you're looking to improve your proprietary deal flow and improve the data access, then reach out to Grata today. Now back to the podcast.
So we're obviously seeing a tightening credit environment at the moment. What's been your kind of approach in relation to structured equity?
Sure. So a meaningful portion of our portfolio or our fund portfolio is structured equity investments. So ones where we're not participating in a buyout. We are providing primary capital that may be just for a minority of the equity in a somewhat structured or customized way. And at times that's been less interesting for companies to take on. Today, as rates have really climbed, it's more and more compelling. And so the decision we're seeing certain owner-operated businesses, or in some cases, smaller sponsor-led businesses make is, they may be in an industry that can't get access to plain vanilla bank debt, or banks are just banks, or private lenders are moving slow, or the debt that is expensive is limited, sorry, is available is limited and really expensive. And they're kind of making a decision and saying, hey, instead of paying a high current interest rate and lots of amortization out of the door, I will partner with a private equity fund where, yeah, there may get some sort of structured return, minimum return, that from an IRR basis maybe looks higher than what's available from debt perspective. But at least the way we do it is almost all the cash that would be going out the door to pay P&I to a bank is staying within the system, and a high growth portfolio company gets the benefit of that cash and they can reinvest it in whatever high ROI activity they're engaged in, whether it's CapEx or growing their sales force or some other initiative. And so that offering and the ability to customize that based on someone's growth needs is resonating pretty well in today's market. And frankly, we're way more aligned than a lender is, right? We're playing for that upside that we own, even if we don't control the company. And so at the margin, we're going to be rooting for that business's success and helping them where we can, as opposed to a lender who really is capped upside and they're just going to focus around covenant compliance.
Appreciate that. And we're seeing a lot more private equity firms now work on a narrower sector focus. And I noticed that you guys have gone down specifically down the services route. What was it that drove you down, that particular niche as a sector?
I think it was a combination of both intentional and organic. So I think, generally speaking, we've been attracted to businesses that have very low correlation with the broader macroeconomic cycle and business cycle. So businesses that their relationship with the underlying customer, in many cases it's smaller, medium-sized businesses, is very consistent and sticky, where that underlying customer, they're going to retain that customer relationship at 90%+ year over year, no matter if it's COVID, the global financial crisis, we're at times of war or peace. That is, that lack of volatility related to the macro is important to us. And so we found that within our niches, so elements of real estate services and financial and business services, there are business models that are relatively sticky and frankly viewed as essential by their underlying customers. And so we've been attracted to those. In addition, certain elements of those industries are subject to a lot of regulation. So in real estate services, there's, you know, tremendous amount of nuanced city, state, and federal laws around tenant protection, around building safety, around emergency response. And we've been successful and look for dynamics where we can invest behind an emerging regulatory trend or behavioral trend. So hopefully the underlying company we're partnering with is doing great, but they have the wind at their back in that, you know, the potential market of customers has to pick someone like them or one of their competitors to start doing business with. So, you know, frankly, as we've dove into these sectors, we've just kind of compounded on our existing knowledge and networks there and found that's been productive.
So you mentioned the portfolio there. How do you partner with portfolio management teams and obviously support the driving growth of that business?
Sure. So it's definitely not a one-size-fits-all approach. There's a range of engagement that we will have with a portfolio company. And some of that is predicated on the level of ownership we'll have. So if we're truly a minority investor, we'll be helpful to them on a periodic or situational basis. In many cases, we may have one board seat. We'll provide the standard advice and stewardship that one would having that position, but we're going to get involved on special projects with them. That could be around a business development initiative, helping them with a key hire, potentially in the finance or data analytics suite. Those are common. Or around a strategic acquisition or financing they may have in the future. In cases where we have more material ownership, and those are often in cases where the company is engaged in a build-up or roll-up strategy. They're acquiring lots of smaller assets or pools of customers or subscribers. Our team's going to be very hands-on. So we will partner with the company to engage in diligence and structuring, and in some cases execute strategic M&A on their behalf. And we'll be deeply engaged, you know, deeply interacting with people on the management team on a daily basis. But it's really going to be based on the needs and objectives of the company.
Not only am I the host of the Private Equity Podcast, but I'm also the founder and managing partner of Raw Selection. Raw Selection is a private equity specialist executive search firm with two divisions, one that focuses on portfolio, C-suite executive hires, and one that focuses on private equity direct hires of your back office and investment deal professionals, operating across Europe and North America. A unique offering of our service is that we offer a full money-back guarantee on all upfront deposits. We typically take around $10,000 as an upfront deposit to commence the search process. The remainder is then on completion, but that upfront deposit is completely refundable. If you're not happy with our service, we will refund that upfront deposit, no questions asked.
And what are your key learnings? You mentioned at the beginning you worked at Goldman Sachs. What did you learn and take away from that that you utilize now in as managing partner of your firm?
That's a great question. So I'd say there, you know, it was a phenomenal learning experience and made a lot of friends and colleagues that I still work with in some capacity today. There are two things that probably stand out as most formative. So one is through the training program and early days there, the firm just imbues a standard of excellence that they expect everyone to engage in, regardless of your role or position. And I remember on my first day, they basically said, you know, a lot of you have done well at school, but going forward, you effectively need to be scoring 100 on every test and every work product you do. So there is definitely a culture of perfection and excellence. But at the same time, a real standard of collaboration. So people are expected to be highly collaborative with their colleagues, senior and junior. And that's definitely stayed with me. The second element was the experience of being there, frankly, in an on-balance sheet investing group through the global financial crisis, which is pretty scary. And I remember being at the desk and our team getting calls to buy assets or provide capital to failing banks, big and small, and seeing how, you know, all these institutions that we had kind of assumed were incredibly durable were actually quite frail at certain moments. And it really underscored kind of a need to think through every angle on the downside when investing. You know, if these big institutions could all of a sudden be at such peril, you know, what could happen to a small growing business that was a fraction of the size? And so that experience really is stayed with me and informs how we think about new investments still today.
What are your influences? What do you read? What do you watch? What do you listen to that you would recommend that others check out?
Sure. So I'm not sure my influences are so unique. Obviously, I read the journal, Bloomberg, Grants, all the relatively standard weekly, daily periodicals. One of the things our team does, which is great, I spend a lot of time reading, is we aggregate, whether it's deep market data, economic data, or, you know, frankly, interesting articles from industry-specific periodicals in all the sectors we invest in. So that gets aggregated on a weekly basis and leads to many hours of reading within some of these niches we're investing in. So that's really given us edge when we're meeting with a new company or evaluating an investment to really think like the industry participants are. For fun, I was a history major. I spent a decade or so studying classics. So read a lot of nonfiction. And I am a New York hip hop fan, you know, going 3+ decades. So I am guilty of still listening to the radio and listening to New York radio still.
Excellent. And if anybody wishes to reach out to you post this, Josh, how best do they get in touch, please?
Sure. Best way is either through LinkedIn or our website, which is www.thayerstreetfullyspelledout.com.
Excellent. We'll put that in the show notes. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Josh, sharing all the value and insight of Goldman Sachs, your current role as managing partner of Thayer. So thank you very much for sharing all of that.
Thanks, Alex.
And as always, thank you very much for everybody joining us today. Should you ever need support with private equity professionals or portfolio executive hiring, then please do reach out to us at Raw Selection. If you've not already done so, please do subscribe and you'll be notified the next podcast, which now comes out every single week. But till the next time, keep smashing it. And thank you very much for listening.